For this morning, United States against Wendt.
May it please the Honorable Court, good morning. My name is Ralph Metrick, counsel, and I'm here for the appellant James Wendt. If ever there was a paradigm to overturn a district court's finding based on credibility, I respectfully would submit that this is the case. That here there were the testimony of the police officers in this case concerning probable cause, or I should say the lack of probable cause, more, and the fact that there wasn't any reasonable articulable suspicion to stop Mr. Wendt's car, the appellant in this case.
But you would agree that the probable cause we're looking for is the probable cause that he committed a traffic violation.
Yes, that would be the type of probable cause that this court would be concerned with. And we would, again, submit that there was not any probable cause at all to stop Mr. Wendt's car.
But how else is a judge going to determine that other than based on testimony from the police that he didn't signal or he was straddling the lanes or he was doing whatever they say? I mean, they'll say that, he'll say the other thing, and the judge just has to decide.
That's absolutely right. It's a he said, she said sort of situation, except you have to look at the cumulative of testimony of the police officers in this case, because I would respectfully submit again that it was dissembling upon dissembling upon dissembling. Or I suppose I shouldn't be so delicate, it was lie after lie after lie. And I think that was amply demonstrated by the cross-examination in this case, because they said they were there to do routine traffic patrol. The boys down south had set up, pardon me, what was really essentially a drug interdiction roadblock.
Sure. No, I mean, but after Wren, I don't have any doubt that, you know, given the evidence you put in the record, that this was a drug interdiction roadblock. But the way they were operating the drug interdiction roadblock, as I understand what the testimony that Judge Regan credited, was by stopping only people who were foolish or unlucky enough also to commit a traffic violation by failing, you know, all the 80 million traffic violations people may commit, failing to signal or they didn't have a seat, you know, whatever it may be.
But see, that is, respectfully, that is what we're arguing, that they didn't see any traffic violation. Because based on all the totality of circumstances, the surrounding circumstances of what they, of where they were and what they said.
They said they saw. The judge believed them. Now what?
Well, I think, respectfully, the Judge Regan, he just turned his back on the facts of the case.
Well, that might be, but we review the facts with the our belief that he didn't turn his back on them.
I know you have to give the district court judge due deference. That's what
more
the law
than
says.
Just due deference. We don't get involved in questions of fact. He does.
But we have to look at. But you still can look at the surrounding.
We can do a lot of things.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We can do a lot of things. One of them is we can't decide up front that he's a liar, that the judge is a little off.
Well, I think that there's clear error is not an insurmountable standard.
It isn't, but let me just give you an example. I mean, if you're going to try to say, to take the traffic violations that Mr. Wendt supposedly committed, one of them was straddling the two lanes as he goes off on the exit ramp that the police are diverting him, unbeknownst to him, diverting him off onto. Well, if you had a photograph in the record that shows it's just a skinny little lane and there aren't two lanes that can be straddled, then maybe you would have something, I hate to use an automobile analogy, that has traction. You might be able to begin to say it's just physically impossible that this could have been the violation because there aren't two lanes. But other than that, you know, unless you happen to have a traffic helicopter going overhead that captured the fact that he really did signal, I just don't know how we overturn, as Judge Bauer is saying, how we overturn a credibility determination.
Well, I, again, as I stressed before, it's the totality. He didn't signal. I suppose that's the crux of it. But then again, he said he had binoculars and he didn't signal, yet he couldn't make out a license plate.
But that doesn't seem impossible to me at all, because signaling is light. You know, your eye can be attracted to it, whereas, you know, you may or may not even be looking in the direction of the license plate.
Well, it's, again, we have to go back, I think, to the totality. He talks about the straddling, and that's not a violation of Illinois law. at all. You can straddle the lane. Again, it doesn't matter in Illinois unless that if there's somebody near you, or you. I guess you have to just drive very carefully and look around and see if there's someone behind you. But straddling the lane by itself is not a violation of Illinois law. It's just pure serendipity in this case that of all the four people that were stopped at Black Lane that day, they were out-of-state plates. That's what's amazing here. And then you have to look at everything else that happened in this case. The giving of the warning ticket, that was an afterthought. The times that the police put down for the traffic violation.
That was also found to be a mistake.
Your Honor, I'm sorry?
That was also found to be a mistake by the trial court.
Well, I think it's more than a mistake. Again,
well, the court didn't. Your opinion on the subject is interesting, but not persuasive. His opinion, on the other hand, it carries weight. He said he believed it was a mistake.
You know, I suppose there'll never be a time. That's why I said this case is really a paradigm. There'll never be a time, there will never be a case ever, where we can overturn, where we can't give, I'm sorry, let me back up and twist my words. There'll never be a time when one party asserts that, look, I didn't commit a traffic violation. The judge says, you did. And
no,
we have
the
to
judge
automatically
doesn't.
Give deference.
The judge says, and the police officer says you did. And the judge says, I believe the police officer.
But I don't think the judge can blindly just say, I believe the police officer.
Oh, yeah, he can. He can listen to the police officer and make up his own mind as to whether who was most credible. That's what the rules are.
But that's
those
why
are quaint rules, I understand, but those are the rules under which we play.
Well, but that's, you know,
the finding of fact of credibility by the trial court, or the finder of fact if it was a jury, is almost insurmountable in this court.
And I would respectfully say it's not insurmountable. I think this court
said almost insurmountable. It would have to be against all common sense, against the rules of nature, and before we could move.
And that's exactly what the government said in their brief, against the rules of nature. And I respectfully would assert, again, I really would, that to believe the police officers in this case.
You don't believe police officers.
I don't believe them one
bit.
Of course I don't. I'm my client's advocate, but I don't believe them because it does violate the rules of nature. Because they were impeached time after time.
They probably don't believe you either, so feel easy.
I'm sorry?
You can feel easy. They probably don't believe you either, so, you know, what the heck. It's fair up there.
Again, you've done
a marvelous job with what you have to work with, I can say that.
Well, I have to credit the trial counsel with doing an excellent job, and I was not trial counsel. Thank you. I will reserve a minute for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. I'd like to address some of the points raised by Mr. Michik in his argument. The testimony regarding probable cause came not just from one officer, as the court is aware, but two. So we have two separate officers viewing separate traffic violations that they have a reasonable belief have occurred based on their personal observations. Officer Parkinson, in the first instance, who was placed on the situated on the overpass, observed two separate failures by the appellant to use his traffic signal when changing lanes. He testified that he crossed over two lanes of travel and then again crossed into the exit lane to exit onto Black Lane Road, both times without using his signal. It was based upon...
Could I ask you, I don't know if the record reflects this or not, but two things. I recall that the police officers also testified that there were some people who exited at Black Lane who they did not stop.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that was Officer Parkinson. It was his testimony that the only individuals who, upon exiting the interstate 5570 at Black Lane Road, whose vehicles were stopped, were those who they had personally observed to have committed traffic violations. So that was one of the other points I wanted to address, and that is this is not a roadblock. This is not City of Indianapolis v. Edmond, as the appellant would have the court believe. These are selective traffic stops that are being conducted only when there is a reasonable belief by the officer that a traffic violation has occurred. Now, yes, there is an artifice of stratagem that is being employed on the roadside when those signs are placed there. Not all vehicles are being stopped by those on the interstate. In fact, as the officer's testimony bore out, there are no officers down on the interstate. If you disregard those signs and continue forward, absent being observed by another officer, you're not stopped.
And do you happen to know, or does the record show how far this exit is from a state line?
This is, Your Honor, I believe it is exit number 9 on Interstate 5570, and the exit markers correspond to the miles from the bridge over the Mississippi from St. Louis. It's approximately 9 miles east by northeast of St. Louis.
So the fact that there'd be out-of-state cars is not a stunning one.
Not unusual at all in the Metro East area, Your Honor, where regularly commuters cross the bridge both ways. And, in fact, these were, I would note, the appellant plates as he had them displayed on the car anyway were Missouri plates. So that is not something that would arouse necessarily arouse suspicion absent other circumstances. I might note that the appellant makes much of the failure of Officer Parkinson to observe the license plate on the vehicle. I'd submit that would only be material if, in fact, Officer Parkinson had alleged that the traffic violation was failure to bear current plates or the proper registration on the vehicle, and that's not the case. I think the court views it properly in citing what the officer was looking at, which is a failure to signal as this vehicle crosses over several lanes in an attempt to exit the highway. I think viewing it with the benefit of the defendant's testimony is important as well. The defendant's testimony is, of course, ultimately that while he originally told the officers at the side of the road that he was getting off the road to get gas, notwithstanding the fact that he had between a quarter and a half of tank and a large SUV of fuel remaining, and notwithstanding the further fact that he admitted he had not seen any signs for gasoline, and the officers testified that the closest gas station is 1 mile from that exit and is not visible from the interstate, he later comes back and at the suppression hearing testifies, and he was ultimately, of course, found by the district court to have perjured himself in several other material respects. But he testified that exiting the highway, he was attempting to avoid contact with the police. And I think that brings us full circle in this case, Your Honors, inasmuch as this case is squarely governed by the principles set forth in the Wren decision of the Supreme Court in 1996. The interest in enforcing the traffic laws outweighs the defendant's would-be privacy interest in avoiding contact with the police. And when we have two separate officers who view a total of 3 separate traffic violations, this court would essentially have to find all of those findings the findings of fact by the district court to have been completely unreasonable in light of all those facts, and the district court would have had to discount all 3 of those observations in order to find that this traffic stop was not one that was supported by probable cause. Briefly, as to Mr. Michik's representation that failure to remain within one lane does not violate the traffic laws of the state of Illinois, introduced as Exhibit 4 at the suppression hearing was 625 of the Illinois Compiled Statutes, Section 5/11-709, subsection A of which states that a vehicle shall be driven as nearly as practicable entirely within a single lane and shall not be moved from such lane until the driver is first determined that that movement can be made safely. Officer Borm, who is the officer who was off of the exit ramp, testified that what he observed was not what the court contemplated could be a problem, that is an issue within the exit ramp, but rather once that vehicle had exited onto what is a 4-lane marked striped roadway, he was straddling the center line of that roadway. In other words, he came off the interstate, and instead of determining one lane or the other, once he had executed the right-hand turn, which is visible, I would note, Your Honor, from an aerial photograph that is in the record as Government's Exhibit 1 from the suppression hearing. It's an oversized exhibit, and the officers marked on that exhibit where their relative positions were and where they observed the defendant's vehicle, if the court is interested in consulting that. But it's Borm's testimony that once off the ramp, this secondary violation had been committed, but that he was also acting with the benefit of the information that Officer Parkinson had relayed to him by way of radio traffic, that he had observed these 2 other separate violations, and that when he executed the traffic stop, it was in reliance on both. He said it was primarily on his personal observation, but that he was also acting on the information relayed to him by Officer Parkinson. So we have 3 separate traffic violations. And it's the district court's conclusion that it's without question that Officer Borm properly stopped the appellant's vehicle, that there was probable cause, that the district court finds twice over in its order that the stop was proper. And in so doing, cites all 3 of the bases, the would-be traffic violations that have been observed. That the district court resolved the discrepancy between the officers and the appellant's testimony in favor of the officers is not subject to being disturbed by this court based on the record that's presented here. I take great exception to Mr. Michik's representation that this is the case of all cases to overturn that. In fact, when you couple it with the adverse credibility finding that is categorical in several respects by the district court as to the defendant's credibility at the suppression hearing, the district court clearly evaluated the mannerisms. He stated in his in rendering his judgment that the obstruction of justice enhancement was warranted at the sentencing, that he looked the witnesses in the eyes. He made the very types of physical observations of these officers and the defendant, respectively, that is contemplated by the Eddy case, the verbal and nonverbal cues, how they responded to the questions. I'd submit that the impeachment of the defendant, as it relates to several material issues, was sufficiently complete for the court to determine, as it did, that the defendant's testimony willfully dissembled in several material respects. And even though the court did not find that he willfully dissembled as it relates to the issues touching on probable cause for the traffic stop, he nevertheless found that that testimony was false. So for the appellant to now state that the court turned its back on the facts is categorically belied by the record, wherein Judge Reagan went categorically through each of the areas of testimony that the government represented were perjurious and found, in fact, on a couple of them that, well, I'm going to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt here and say that he could have forgotten whether or not he used a turn signal. The fact of the matter is, Your Honors, that, of course, it's not clearly erroneous for him to conclude that an officer who is positioned to observe traffic and observes that a vehicle fails to use that signal would be more credible than an individual who's driving on a long trip, as it turns out, all the way from Dallas, Texas to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and in one instance or two in this case, fails to use his turn signal. So whereas here it's not exceeding, in sum, Your Honors, it's not exceedingly improbable by any means based on this record that the officers observed traffic violations, and therefore the finding of fact by the district court that they so concluded reasonably is not subject to being disturbed by this court. If there are no further questions from the court, I'll yield the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Michik.
I'd just like to take poetic license with Gertrude Stein. A roadblock is a roadblock is a roadblock, and clearly there was a roadblock here. I'd like to point out in the record Exhibit 8, that was a fax from the Corporation Counsel from Collinsville to the attorneys, the trial lawyers in this case, and he said, this is information concerning the roadblock that was set up at Black Lane. So clearly from the Corporation Counsel himself, there's an admission that there was a roadblock. And the court asked a very interesting question of counsel for the government about whether or not the roadblock was near close to the state line or state border. Well, it's actually close to Missouri, but it's interesting to note that the three or the four cars that were stopped were not solely Missouri plates, that they were from other states too. So again, it's not pure serendipity that only four cars from different states were stopped. No one in Illinois was stopped. Only out-of-state plates were stopped.
And of course, a law-abiding group.
That's right. Careful drivers in Illinois.
Very careful.
But you know, the problem, I really think, and it's not one that I'm without sympathy for, but the problem is, after Wren, the government can say, yeah, we set up this roadblock to catch traffic violators in the hopes that they'll have lots of cocaine in the car.
That's right.
And
Wren.
That's where we are.
It's true. Wren, this is, I suppose, the last bastion, is to argue probable cause, because you can't argue the subjective belief of the police officer anymore, any frivolous traffic violation. But that's why we're saying there wasn't a frivolous traffic violation in this case at all. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a violation. The record is clear. There was significant material impeachment of those police officers. The way they gave the ticket, it wasn't even inventoried. The warning ticket wasn't even inventoried in this case. It was given afterwards. The times were changed. They kept changing the times. That's why it's all suspect. That's why they're saying, okay, we didn't signal. We saw him straddle the lane. So we can't attack in cross-examination. Of course, there wasn't a video camera.
Okay, Mr. We have to wrap up, Mr. Michik.
I thank you for your attention. Thank you
very much. Thank you to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.